All the way from the metropolis of Guelph, Ontario, Joe Burns has connected with The Antidote. Thanks for joining me, Joe.
Well, thanks, Dave, for having me.
You and I have gotten together to talk about your only album, Artifice Soul. That released in 2021, but your music must have begun earlier than that. What about telling us about that?
Yeah, so music's always been around me. My father, he plays guitar and bass, and he always loved the Beatles. So the Beatles were always on in our house. My dad was always playing songs and learning songs and playing in bands. And so it was just always around me that way. And then my mom, she loves music, loves to dance. So I don't think I could escape it. And when I was about 9 or 10, I did take some guitar lessons. And I did that for a while, but that didn't really stick at that time. Like I did that for a couple of years. And then in high school, friends of mine for a project, a high school project, they were running a coffee house to raise money for charity. And they were looking for acts to play. And another friend of mine who was quite a good guitar player, kind of wanted to start a band. He said, why don't we put something together for this coffee house and see if that could work? I know you used to play guitar. And so I started sort of learning from him and learning on the go. And that's how things got started. And then we had a high school band called District 118 that was together till the end of high school. And then maybe a year or so after we finished and all kind of went our own ways. And then that ended. By that point, I was writing a lot of things on my own, performing at things around the university. I went to Trent University, funny enough. So I started writing my own things, performing. And it evolved from there.
And when you said about being at Trent University, I've got to explain to our listeners that The Antidote originates at Trent Radio in Peterborough, Ontario, where Trent University is. You told me in an email that you once performed a song at the radio station.
Yeah, so friends of mine at university had a show on the radio called Show Me the Funny. They're two hilarious guys. So they would do a lot of comedy and funny things, but they had me on at one point and worked me into some of their comedy, but gave me a chance to play one of my songs as well. And it's a song that did end up on the album Artifice Soul. And the song is called Front Steps. It was brand new at the time. I'd just sort of written just the acoustic guitar and vocals at that point. And if you listen to it on the album, it's got a few more elements to it now, but I had the opportunity to perform that song on Trent Radio back quite a while ago now. So it's interesting that I'm being given another opportunity to talk about the music now on the same station.
This also leads into something of yours that I happen to steal from YouTube. Okay. So I hope you don't mind about this.
No, that's fine.
You did a front porch recording of A Blink in My Life's Eye.
Yes.
A song you wrote in 2003, and I read that was for Trent University Champlain College graduating class.
That's true.
Who hired you to do that?
So it wasn't a sort of a hired or paid gig. What happened there was I got asked to do a speech. And I had done speeches before, but so here's the thing. Sometimes a song's just given to me. And I feel in terms of my writing process like songs come from God, and they might be for a number of reasons, but for some reason, this one started to come to me at this particular occasion, which was the graduation for the Champlain College graduating class. And so I decided instead of doing a speech that I would perform the song. And so that's how that came about.
Let's get into the album itself. You've got to help me out with the title track of Artifice Soul.
Okay.
It's the song title. Artifice can mean like a crafty trick.
Mm-hmm.
How does that relate to a person's soul?
So the idea for this song and the title, it came to me with the words initially. So the word artifice and the word soul, when you put them together, if you say them quickly together, it almost sounds like artificial.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in hindsight, I'm like, maybe even in terms of a graphic element, I should have rolled the two words together right side by side in the presentation of it on the album cover. So the idea behind that song is I was just seeing more and more that as a society, we were turning towards technology in a lot of ways and hiding our true selves there. It's funny, I've never been a big video game person, but I remember people playing this game called Sims at the time, and you could sort of create this little world for yourself. And as technology progressed and time went on, it was just more and more of that sort of thing. You know, back at the time I wrote the song, there wouldn't have been things like Instagram and Facebook and all of that. But as those things came along, I thought, wow, the song is even more relevant as time marches on. So the idea behind the song was, you know, not to lose your soul and yourself in some of the things in our world that maybe aren't as meaningful as God and nature and relationships with people that are genuine and personal and in person. And not that technology doesn't offer, I guess, a lot of good ways for people to connect, but I find that a lot of people use it as a way, again, to hide who they truly are. So not to lose our souls or our true selves in a world that maybe offers us a lot of things that try to pull us away from that.
Yeah, I understand that. You know, compared to your other songs, Artifice Soul has more of a rock edge. So that leaves me wondering, like, how would you label your music?
My music would be primarily, I think, like indie folk rock.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it has kind of a 90s feel to it. And definitely a lot of the songs have a Christian element. Like, I would say the ones I'm continuing to write now or that I've already recorded but haven't released, even more so in that direction. But in terms of a sound, Artifice Soul is a bit more of a heavier rock song, or has sort of like a punk edge to it. Green Day is one of my favorite bands. So I think that there was probably some influence on the sound there. But yeah, I think overall, the folk feel is probably because my main way to write is I sit down with my acoustic guitar usually and write that way. And then sometimes as they evolve, then they can get a little heavier. But most of the songs in the album would be a bit quieter than that one.
Right. There's something else about Artifice Soul, and that's the line, "Wouldn't it be nice if I took my own advice this one time and let my senses take control?" Now, I know I'm taking this out of context, but so be it. Because we're both married guys, and both of us know that we can't take our own advice because we have to do what our wives tell us.
Well, there you go.
I was on your Facebook page, and I saw that you're involved with another project, Grand River Band. Mm-hmm. That outfit performs a lot of dates doing cover songs. Now, I'm not being critical here, but do you ever feel like you're selling yourself short by doing covers instead of just doing your own music?
Well, so it's interesting. The band itself, we've started toying with the idea of doing some of my songs and trying to work them up, even maybe a little different for the band. So we've started that process, and we've been doing it with the song The Gift as a starting point. But the great thing about the Grand River Band, I do enjoy playing the covers. I love playing other people's music, playing a lot of the bands that I'm inspired by, and then just being sort of challenged to learn new songs that other members of the band want to bring in.
Mm-hmm.
So the great part about this project for me is that my dad is the lead guitar player.
Ah.
And so...
Family connections.
Family connections. So what happened was it was his band, and they had another lead singer. And then that lead singer moved to Florida. And so I was asked, because I had stepped in a couple times, just joined the band and sang some songs and they're practicing and that sort of thing if I happened to be visiting my parents. So the other guys in the band said to my dad, they were searching for a singer. And they said, "Do you think that Joe would do it?" And he said, "I don't know, he's pretty busy." But as soon as they asked, I said yes, because it was something that... I wanted to find the opportunity to put as much music back into my life at that point as possible. It was a chance to play in a band with my dad and spend time with him and then get to know the other guys in the band as well. So I jumped at the opportunity.
You jumped into the river with both feet.
That's right. That's right. Grandly.
Oh, man. We are getting bad here, aren't we?
Well, you just said we're both married. I guess maybe I'm throwing some dad jokes in there. I don't know.
That's the both of us. Here's something else. You made your own river song, I'll Choose the River.
Mm-hmm.
You use a simile of describing the negativity of a city and comparing it to the presence of God being symbolized as a river. So you live in a small city. Mm-hmm. So are you saying it's easier to connect with God in nature compared to urban living?
I think to a degree, I would say that could be true. In terms of the urban setting, it was becoming stark to me. So the place where I would go for a run and do a lot of thinking is by a river. And as I was running by the river that morning, and so the route for the run runs by a river, and then I would run up. There's the Basilica, or the Church of Our Lady in Guelph, is like an iconic symbol, and there's a lot of steps to run up to it. And so I would challenge myself by running up those steps, and I was running up the steps and then sort of turned to look over the skyline. And it had changed so much since, in a short period of time, from the time I had first started running in that route. Tall buildings and people sort of crammed into smaller spaces, buildings facing each other. And that's what gave me the idea. So I was actually watching the sun come up over the top of a building. And that gave me the idea for the line, "Sunshine stretches and pulls himself up on the new downtown high rise." He sighs and says to himself, "What happened to my skyline?" So it's like nature noticing the change. And it's the same time I'm noticing the change. So I don't know if it's harder to find God in that setting, but it's harder to maybe find the quiet to focus on those things that, you know, it's like what I talked about in Artifice Soul. It kind of goes akin to that. We need to find these places where we can quiet our minds, connect with people, connect with God. As I ran and watched these things and had these thoughts coming along, I could see the struggle there.
You got to tell me something. When you run up those steps for the Basilica, do you ever turn around and raise your hands up into the sky and do your Rocky imitation?
I can't say I haven't. I think I probably found myself pretty funny the first time I did that.
Back to something serious. You've shared a little bit about your Christian faith coming into your music. But the thing is, in the songs, it isn't always front and center. Many of the songs could be read in more than one way.
Yeah, well, so I would say a starting point is I don't set out to expressly write just Christian songs. I sort of write whatever, as I said earlier, kind of whatever I feel is given to me. And I think a lot of them have a Christian element or a Christian message because, you know, the songs from God, there'd be a reason. There'd be something that maybe I can be useful in presenting to the world. But that's not always the case. As I said before, sometimes, you know, I need a song that helps me say goodbye to a group of friends, or I need a song that reminds my wife how much I love her. And God will give me with those things too. And then the songs that could be interpreted in different ways, as you sort of pointed out, I think it might be because there can be more than one theme in there. So, you know, a lot of the songs are about relationships. They might be relationships with people. They might be relationships with God. They might be relationships with technology or nature. So I think those elements, like, they don't always stand on their own. They're sort of interwoven sometimes. And so that might be why a single song could carry a couple of different possible interpretations or messages.
You make it sound as if these songs come naturally. You know, so many songwriters sit down, they're purpose-driven, I've got to write a song. You don't work that way.
No, I for the most part, I haven't. What I try to do is, when an idea starts to come to me, I try to seize the moment. Find a spot to start writing things down. It's almost like I'm given a starting point. I do have to work the songs through, but often the way that it'll happen, like I'll start to get a melody or a chord progression, maybe a first verse, and then I do have to sit down and sort of craft it. But I don't often sit down and say, I'm going to write a song about XYZ today. I look for, or I try to pay attention to when the ideas are flowing, and I go from there.
Something that I find is that quite a few of the songs of Joe Burns remind me of the Tragically Hip, especially a track, say, like The Apathy.
Yeah.
Did the Hip play an influence on your music?
I'm sure they do. That's my favorite band. Yeah. Like,
did you go to the final concert?
Oh, yeah. We went to the first night in Toronto, and it was emotional. It was amazing to watch someone going through so much perform so well. Yeah, it was an experience. Did you go?
No.
No?
I watched the final show on a big screen TV that one of our neighbors had set up in his yard for everybody to come over and watch the show.
Well, that'd be a great experience too. But yeah, we got to the first night in Toronto on that last tour.
Maybe I should explain to our American listeners that the Tragically Hip are an iconic Canadian band, but they weren't as popular in the States. I got to hear it from you, Joe. What do you think about that? Was that unfair to that band?
It's hard to say. I know that they did have pockets in the States where they were popular, and they could then they could tour and they could do well. But you know, they would, like, here in Canada, they would play stadiums, and like I saw them in sometime in the mid to late 90s. I saw them in another roadside attraction. They're playing, you know, Molson Park and Barrie.
Oh yeah,
right. Like, it's huge shows. So I think something about his writing resonated with Canadians, and whether it's fair or not to that band, it's funny because we often say, well, you know, some people say, well, they're kind of ours in terms of a Canadian gem. But at the same time, you know, I think they're, like I said, I think they did resonate with some people in the States. I see things now, you know, technology and algorithms. I was kind of slamming technology a little bit earlier, but it can introduce you to new things, and I'll get videos popping up for me now and then of people discovering the Hip, people from different countries discovering the Hip and going, how come we haven't heard of this band? And so, you know, I kind of don't think it's over for them. like in a way, I think that there's a legacy that could still be discovered, but that, you know, that said, we were fortunate to have a band like that in Canada that was so beloved.
But, you know, this also ties into you creating your own music. So how do you become a popular artist? Or is that something you're even wanting to aim for?
I don't know. I don't know if I'm trying to become a famous artist or anything, but I would be happy if, I guess, the more people that hear my music and get exposed to some of these messages, I feel like that's the purpose. And, you know, if it ever became a full-time gig, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find someone who loves music who would say, I don't want to become a professional musician. Like, if that opportunity ever presented itself, I would be grateful and happy for that opportunity. You know, the things you learn about the way that people make it in the music business today, you know, it's a double-edged sword. I'm writing songs that are cautionary about technology, but at the same time, you know, when I put the album out and started deciding to perform, it was necessary for me to grab up some of those social media accounts and put the music out there that way.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm 44 years old. I didn't grow up with the technology in the same way that younger artists would have. So there's a lot of learning for me in terms of how you put the music out there that way. But it's been a fun experience learning those things. And if it ever caught momentum, as I said, I think it would help serve the purpose of the music and the songs and the messages. And I, like I said, I think you'd be hard pressed to find anyone who would say they would never want to do this full time.
So why do you really do the music?
I think that it fulfills me.
And it's just meant to fill up all your spare time that you have?
Yeah, I don't have a lot of spare time, but it in some ways it feels like the real me. And I don't mean that other parts of my life aren't the real me, but it's just it's a big part of me that makes me happy. I enjoy performing. I enjoy connecting with people, you know, through the music. When people have come up to me at some of my shows and they've asked me specific questions about the lyrics or the stories behind songs, you know, it gives me an opportunity not just to perform them for them, but then to have a conversation and expand on the messages. And so that's all very, very fulfilling.
There is a song from you that really grabbed me, and that's To Be So Strong. There's this big emphasis on the strings, you know, which is something I absolutely adore. But it also left me wondering what's most important to your music. Is it the lyrics that you're writing, or is it the music itself?
That's a really good question. So the lyrics are very important. I went to university to study history and English, and I do enjoy the part. Well, you know, when I say like I'll be given part of kind of a song starting point and then I have to work with it or craft it, I enjoy the wordplay and finding ways to make it interesting to present the message. Like I really enjoy that. And so the lyrics are important, both in terms of their message, in terms of me playing around with things and getting ideas and finding ways to present them that are interesting. That's all very important. The music for me, I've never wanted it to sound corny or hokey. I have an idea of how I want the songs to sound that, again, like I'll get sort of a starting point. I'll say I'll get a melody or a chord progression or something to start with. And then I'll want to work it so that it serves the song and serves the lyrics and is interesting and could catch people's attention. You know, I've noticed you have a tagline for The Antidote, Christian music that doesn't suck.
Right.
And so that makes sense to me in some ways. And not that it's just Christian music that might suck, but, and not that I'm saying my music is great or anything, but I work hard at it to make sure it's interesting, that the lyrics are meaningful. When you ask the question about the strings on that song, that's actually Patrick Corbett, who produced the album. That was his idea, and he came up with that piece. And so it's something he's very proud of in terms of his work on the album.
We need to talk about The Gift. You've mentioned that song a couple of times during this talk, and I think that one is your standout song, mostly because of the topic. It has a brutally sad verse. You asked for one gift, her life to be lived just a little bit longer, the purest request, a chance to raise one son and one daughter. And on the night she asked, she danced. I need to hear more about that.
Yeah, so this is a real personal story. Growing up, the minute I started writing my own songs, my mother always said, when are you going to write me a song? And I tried to explain to her, like, I don't usually just sit down and write a song. I kind of get an idea and I go from there. So she would always joke with me, when are you going to write me a song? But her life story is very interesting. And at some point that song was just given to me. So when I was 3 and my sister was 1, my mother lost her leg to cancer.
Oh boy.
And it had been a struggle for them to figure out what had even gone on. So I can remember being like a little guy, you know, playing around on the floor and seeing a cast on my mom's leg. And at one point they were like, well, maybe there's a fracture. They couldn't quite figure out what was going on. So eventually they figured out it was cancer. The timing of them figuring out it was cancer was probably good because she was able to have both me and my sister, who's 2 years younger, before they figured out what it was, like in terms of pregnancy with my sister. And I don't know what would have happened with that pregnancy with my sister if they found out it was cancer. She also, her body, you know, she had to go through chemotherapy, all those sorts of things. So I think that there was probably some divine intervention in terms of even when they were able to figure out what the cancer was. So my mom is a very faithful person. And so she was 26 years old and she's about to lose her leg. She loved to dance. That's a key part of the story. They told her that the cancer had probably, you know, spread. It was an aggressive type of bone cancer. And so she'd have to have chemotherapy. And so she prayed to God that she would be given the chance to raise her 2 children. And then the night before they were going to take her leg, because she didn't know if she'd ever be able to dance again, she danced. So the song's very, this verse is kind of very literal. It's just a literal story of what she was going through. My dad was a young police officer. He had just lost his sister to brain cancer. Now his wife's got cancer. And he's got these two young kids. He's got this intense job. And so it was a stressful time for him too. So the early parts of the song are that part of the story when they were young. And so my mother was given the gift she asked for. She was able to raise her two children. And then we were both adults with our own families. And I can remember I was up at my parents' trailer. And I got a call from my dad while I was up there. And he said, "We're at the hospital and your mom has cancer again." And she was 60 now. So from 26 to 60, she had asked if she could raise her two children. She saw them grow into adults, saw them start their own families, and now she's got cancer. And it's a different kind of cancer this time. Now she had a blood cancer called multiple myeloma. And what had happened is she had been having pain in her arm for a while, and she'd been, again, kind of similar kind of story. Like, she'd been seeing a chiropractor and trying to figure out what might be going on. And then she reached for a glass in the cupboard, and her arm broke.
Oh, no.
And so it's a blood cancer, but it settled into the bone in her arm and it deteriorated to that point. So that's how they found out. Her arm broke and she went to the hospital and they told her it was cancer. And it was in a couple spots in her body. Like, it was through her blood. But then it had settled in a couple spots in her body. So they had to treat those. And so she was worried. She's thinking, well, here you go. I asked for the gift to raise my children. It's happened. And now maybe this is my time. And so I'm thinking to myself, well, I don't want this to be your time. You've got grandchildren now, and you've got other people you need to see grow up and be there for. So then, this is going to sound funny, but I was running on the treadmill this time, not outside. And that song just started to come to me. And the way I see the song is almost like God gave me a prayer to sing back to him, to ask for that gift to continue that she had been given first time around with cancer.
Sure, because that comes up in one of the other verses.
Mm-hmm.
They shared this one gift and taught others to see just how to carry on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Growing up, my house was sort of a hub for lots of friends and family. And, you know, I have close friends who they have strong relationships with my parents. And so I feel like that hope, the strength that my parents showed, that my mom showed, it was inspirational. I think other people got to experience that. Other people got to form strong relationships with my family, none of which would have happened if she wasn't alive.
Well, I think you've probably guessed that this question was going to be coming. So it's been 3 years since Artifice Soul. Is there more music coming from Joe Burns?
Yeah. So, you mentioned earlier, like, all that time I have, right? So I'm busy in terms of, you know, my other job, which is a high school principal. I have young children. They're 11 and 13 now. They're not quite so young anymore. But I have lots of things that pull me in different directions. I did get into the studio with Patrick again last fall to start recording another song. We also have a number of songs kind of in the can that never got finished. So I'm trying to find ways to book the time to get back in and finish those up. So I would say, yes, the music is coming. It's not that far away at this point. It just needs, you know, it's a handful of songs that just need a little finishing up. And then there's, some new songs that, need recording. Yeah. There'll be new music soon.
And you're going to send me that next single as soon as it's ready.
I will do that. You might have some questions for me about that.
Well, listen, Joe, I want to thank you for speaking with The Antidote about your music.
Thank you so much for having me on today. It's been an honor and a pleasure.